powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Here we go now.
Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, let's talk about what Troy Dannon's departure actually means for the Dogs with Huskies insider Christian Capel. Christian, how's it going?
Going well. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Obviously, really surprising news this morning. Were you as shocked as so many fans about Troy Dannon's departure?
I was. Yeah, I was very surprised. Woke up, grabbed the phone, and that was pretty much right at the time that Pete Thamel was tweeting that Troy Dannon had left for Nebraska. And it's I got a text from my mom a little while ago that said that I literally did a double take when I saw the Dannon news. And that was pretty much my reaction as well. Been on the job not yet 6 months. He was literally just in the desert for their annual donor event down there yesterday, talking about the future. And it's certainly not what I expected when I woke up today.
What do you think Dog fans are feeling right now? I mean, because you have this great couple of years, DeBoer leaves for Alabama. A lot of people were upset. Me personally, I understand. Obviously, it's Alabama. And then this Dannon news, it almost feels like they're going to be afraid to trust again, man. How do you think they're feeling?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think Kalen DeBoer's departure probably put them in that frame of mind anyway. It kind of seemed like even when they hired Jed Fish to replace him, it's almost like people kind of skipped over pretty quickly the worry about, well, you know, this guy has jumped around from job to job for his whole career. How long is he really going to stay at Washington? And just sort of arrived at, hey, forget it. There's no point worrying about it because coaches are going to come and go and just enjoy the ride while you're on it, so to speak. And so I think that the DeBoer's exit kind of triggered this fundamental shift in the way that people regard people in positions of power like that. But you are definitely still seeing some raw emotion. I mean, look, nobody at Washington wants to think of their school or their alma mater or whatever as a stepping stone or a school that, is only good enough until the next thing comes along. But, everyone's situation is different, and you're seeing a lot of reporting, and I'm hearing things too about, you know, this being a personal decision, a family decision. Obviously Troy Dannon is from Iowa and Nebraska is in the Midwest, and maybe that's appealing. So I think you're still seeing kind of some of that lingering raw emotion that maybe was brought out of Husky fans when they had their head football coach leave for another job 4 days after playing for a national championship.
You're absolutely right, Christian. It feels like there were two different reasons for both of these men, but the timeline, the short timeline of both of them making the decision feels like an extra punch to the gut. What does this decision mean, if anything, with Jed Fish? I mean, obviously the most recent hire for Dannon.
Yeah, I mean, Kalen DeBoer was pretty involved in the athletic director search the first time around. At least that's what his public comments were at that time. I would imagine that the head football coach is always going to be able to provide some input in that process. So I would imagine that Jed Fish would be involved to some extent this time around. But, you know, I think that Jed Fish left Arizona for Washington because of a number of things that Washington could provide that doesn't really have a lot to do with who the athletic director is. I don't know that it's a job he took because he was just so sold on Troy Dannon individually. I don't know that there are a ton of football coaches who think that way necessarily. I don't think that Jen Cohen staying at Washington instead of leaving for USC would have been a reason that Kalen DeBoer would have turned down Alabama. You're right. I think Alabama comes calling, you take the Alabama job, and that's how that would have happened no matter who the athletic director was. So certainly it's probably a little bit of an uneasy feeling knowing that the person who hired you is now out the door and you're going to have to forge a relationship with that person's replacement. But I don't know that it means really anything for Jed Fish's short term. You know, I think Washington is a pretty good job relative to the rest of college football, but there's a tier above it that if any one of those schools come calling, your head coach at Washington, unless they're a pretty different individual, is probably leaving regardless of the leadership situation. So I don't know that it impacts really anything for him just yet.
Congratulations, Christian. I am now making you responsible for hiring the next AD. So what type of person should the Huskies go for? Because you mentioned, okay, UW's a great job. I agree. And you mentioned that there's a tier above that. Do you find somebody that you feel like is content with the tier they're at, or do you still shoot for the biggest name with the biggest resume? Walk me through what your hiring process would be like.
Well, I think you're looking for a candidate profile that's pretty similar to what you were looking for 6 months ago. That's, you know, someone who I think you prioritize someone who's been an AD, who has run a department and has navigated that department through difficult times or seen them through, you know, a struggle, whether that just means a football program that was lagging and they were able to hire a coach and build it back up or whatever that might look like. Someone who's kind of been through the ups and downs a little bit, who fully embraces the direction that the sport is heading and is prepared to navigate a department through changes that might be brought about by some of the federal legislation that's pending and has some idea on what a department should look like in an era when maybe players are being compensated directly by the school and, you know, has the future professionalization of college sports at front of mind, because that's where this is going. It's where it's headed. So he's someone who's forward thinking, someone who has embraced all the changes that have happened, all the changes that are still to come, and someone who's got AD experience. Now, I know that an athletic director leaving after 5 months who isn't from here, and a big reason why he's leaving is to get back to the region that he is from, might cause people to think, well, gosh, they need to prioritize hiring someone with Pacific Northwest ties. They need to prioritize hiring someone connected to UW. I think that would be a plus. I think that's always a plus. I don't know that you want to necessarily overreact. I think there are probably some qualified candidates in other parts of the country too, who wouldn't necessarily leave after 5 months if a certain job came open. So I think you're looking for the same kind of candidate that they were looking for when they hired Troy Dannon, frankly.
They're already in the search for men's basketball coach. It's weird imagining a coach being hired without an AD. Does that search then kind of get put on pause?
Well, I don't think it can be put on pause. But then the question becomes, well, who is a head basketball coach going to take a job at a school not knowing who their boss is? There are a handful of senior level administrators at Washington who have been at the school a long time, who are probably plenty capable of banding together and finishing a search. Kind of going back to what we were talking about with football, the things that you might sell a basketball coach on at Washington are all still there, right? So whether you think that's enough to take the UW job or not, it doesn't change depending on who the AD is. Nebraska just moved very, very quickly to replace Trev Albert, probably more quickly than any school ever in replacing an AD, because AD searches tend to drag out a little bit. So I don't know that you can say, hey, unless you've got a real obvious candidate in mind, or maybe you just go internal this time, I don't know that you can say, if you're Washington, hey, we got to have an AD in there before we hire a basketball coach. I think you got to move on with the search and progress with the search and progress with whoever the preferred candidates were or are, and see where it takes you, while also, yeah, working as quickly as possible to get an AD in place. I just don't know that it's realistic that you're going to have an athletic director before you need to hire a basketball coach, because that really can't wait.
Christian, I believe that, the Nebraska job was probably a dream of his. He's from Iowa. The family's from there. That all makes sense to me. But, what I'm supposed to do, I explore every single option. And my first thought was, what's the support like from the boosters, the alums, the administration? And did that have anything to do with him making that move? I don't believe it, but I'm going to ask the question just because I think, that could be a possibility.
Yeah, you certainly have to wonder. Washington's financial situation athletically, I always say they are in a much better place resource-wise than most other, whether you want to say Power Five schools, certainly most other FBS football programs, athletic departments, but they're not in nearly as good a shape as 16 of the teams in the Big Ten that they're joining. They're not going to be receiving, everyone knows they're going to be receiving about half of the share of the media rights contract, while everybody else in the league except for Oregon gets a full share. A school like Nebraska, the football success hasn't been there, but it's not for lack of resources. It's not for lack of funding. It's not for financial issues. It's not for lack of donor support. They get, 50,000 people or more at their spring game every year. There's only a handful of schools where that's possible. So, I could see an administrator looking in Nebraska and forget about what the recent results have been on the field. Look at the bottom line, look at the numbers, look at the finances, look at what's possible, look at what does exist there that doesn't exist at Washington. And I would point at fan support, people showing up win or lose and demanding success and being willing to do their part. Not saying, again, that that's not the case at Washington, but it's not to the level that it is at some of these Big Ten schools. So, yeah, maybe that's a factor. And, again, maybe looking at the budget and just the fact that there's some creativity needed to invest in football at a really high level at Washington, where at a Big Ten school like Nebraska that's getting a full cut of that really wealthy media rights deal, you can just put what you need into it and don't have to maybe get as creative about where the dollars are going to come from.
Very related. The impossible task to me is how Washington gets into that next tier. And sometimes there are just truths, right? There are just schools that are always going to be the very best state school or maybe the best school in that conference or that conference. But you're not going to be Bama. You're not going to be Georgia. There always just is that tier that sometimes your school can't get to. But how does Washington continue to propel themselves upward? What are the pieces that are in their control?
Yeah, I mean, joining the Big Ten was probably a pretty important first step. I think they felt that way when it happened, and the recent news about what the CFP distributions are going to be on this next contract only reinforces how important it is to be in either the SEC or the Big Ten these days, and how wide the gap between those two conferences and everybody else is going to grow. I think that Washington hopes that being in that league means more exposure, their brand being more visible, and playing on television networks and in time slots that are a little more advantageous for maybe awareness of UW and building their brand nationally and getting more people on board with, just knowing who they are and what they're about and all those sorts of things. Beyond that, I don't know. It's, going to be another 6 years or so here, 6-7 years before they get a full cut of the Big Ten media, the next Big Ten media rights contract. That would help. Yeah, I know that Jen Cohen, when she was athletic director, always pointed back to, hey, it's about fan support. It's about people filling the stadium and creating the kind of environment that is big time, that recruits want to be a part of, the coaches want to be a part of. Nowadays, of course, it's about funding the NIL program to get that talent in the door. And, I think in college athletics, until the landscape does shift and the athletic department is paying players directly and that sort of thing, a lot of it does just kind of fall back on, hey, whose fan base is going to be most supportive? Whose fan base is going to show up the most? And those are the schools you kind of see at the top.
At Wazoo, it's important we get Wazoo kind of guys, right? The Kyle Smiths, the Jake Dickards. This is a thought from the text lines, but also mentioned it earlier. Should that be the move with AD? But more specifically, what do you feel about that being the move with the basketball program? Because there's a name, a guy at Garfield, head coach, who's a baller for UW, Brandon Roy, who's hanging around. Do you feel like that should be the new approach?
I don't know. I think that there can be benefits to go in the alumni route. I will say, specifically with regard to Washington's basketball job, if you're going to see an alumnus hired, I would think that Will Conroy would be at the top of that list. If you're talking about going in internal / the former player route, he's been an assistant for several years now under a couple different head coaches. But I don't know that you need to marry yourself to that line of thinking, I think you go out and hire the best coach you can, you know, because I think, shoot, you've seen a number of internal hires not work out at other places. You also see, you know, Trev Alberts was a big Nebraska guy, right? And he just left Nebraska to be AD at Texas A&M. If the right opportunity comes along, right, Jen Cohen left UW for USC. Mm-hmm. The hometown hire can leave too. So I think you try to hire the best coach you can. You understand that everything is temporary and contracts mean nothing and people's word means nothing. Honestly, I mean, that's where college athletics is. It's probably where it's been, but it's hitting home more so for Washington fans now, I think. So I think you hire the best coach. You hope that they win while they're there. And when the point comes, when they leave, either of their own volition or because the school fires them, you do the same thing again with the next person.
And a last question here on a much more like existential note, Bump and I have been having ongoing conversations about just the direction that college football is moving in. So this is less to do with Troy Dannon departing and more to do with transfer portals, coaches and ADs on the move, job openings elsewhere, coaches leaving, you know, college to go to the pros, like the things that people are talking about right now. Do you think that the direction in which college football is moving is overall good for the product, or do you think it hurts? I mean, you've been covering it for a while. You've seen a lot of change.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about the product, I guess it depends on who do you mean it's best for. If it's the people, if it's the fans, if it's the people who buy tickets, the people who go to games, the people who watch every game on TV, who don't miss a game and all those sort of things, I don't know that it is. I think that, you know, it's basketball season, so it's easy to kind of see it through a basketball lens at Washington, but I don't think fans feel the same connection to UW's basketball program that they did during the Lorenzo Romar era, because they were watching third and fourth year hometown players, right, who were recruited out of high school and stayed for their whole career. And, you kind of got to know them and, you know, watch them progress throughout their career. And in the transfer portal era, it's just different, right? You're looking at a new roster every season. So I think that I don't think it hurts the product in terms of the quality of the sport being played. But as far as the fan experience, I think it's changed. You know, the TV era changed it, right? 7:30, 8 p.m. kickoffs for football games changed it, right? Has that improved the product? Made it so that, you know, maybe more people can see it in an exclusive window on TV, but it's harder for people who actually go to the games. They've sort of been cast aside. They don't really matter anymore. The people who actually go to the stadium. So, you know, I don't know. I still love showing up to the stadium on Saturday and watching college football. Obviously Washington specifically put a great product on the field last year that was really fun for everyone to watch and totally engaged the fan base in a way they hadn't been in years. So, certainly it's still possible, right? Ratings were super high. Everyone wanted to watch every Colorado game last year, even though they finished 4-8. So, I mean, there's still a really interesting, fascinating sport with interesting figures and personalities. And, it's a lot of fun, but yeah, I mean, you might get to the point eventually where you do turn fans off just because it's, you know, it's not the sport they grew up watching.
Make sure you read Christian's work at onmontlake.com. Christian, thanks for letting us keep you a little bit late on this one. Big breaking news today. We're sure you're busy, so we'll let you go.
Thanks, Christian.
All right, thank you, guys.
All right, let's get to a very quick headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Seahawks added veteran defensive tackle Jonathan Hankins on a one-year deal. He played with Adam Dirty in Dallas last season. What's the real headline?
Seahawks fans doing a lot of Googling in free agency. Bump, I don't know that that's a really bad thing, though.
Nah, it's a new way of doing this thing, man. And Hankins is a good ball player. 14 games for the Cowboys in 2023. Was a second-round pick in 2013. He's 31 years of age. Played the 1-3 tag, man. He's a stout guy. Take on double teams. Will do all the dirty work. If Dirty likes him, I love him.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. In the very wee hours of the morning today, the Dodgers beat the Padres 5-2 in Seoul, South Korea to open up baseball's regular season. What's the real headline?
You're a sicko if you got up for this one and you need help. Bump, you lost it and get off my lawn about this.
Yeah, I did, man. Come on now. Padres fans, Dodgers fans. It's for them. I get it. You're in South Korea, but you know what? They're live. They can adjust their schedules to be there live. I understand it. But I did love seeing Ohtani's wifey in the stands, man. They kept zooming in on her. She just looks so humble. Like, everything she did was just so humble and graceful. Fun to see. Fun to see Ohtani get it done. Y'all know I love my Mariners. I am a Dodger fan, so I was a little upset. But I did get up early to work out, so I got to see some of this.
I did, though, really appreciate and agree with your point overall that the very first game, the opening game, especially between two California-based teams, like, why not have it in a giant market?
Yeah, it was crazy. Crazy to see Mookie at shortstop, too.
Headline, yeah. He can do anything, man. Mm-hmm.
He can bowl a perfect game, as we found out. Headline number three, the Jets have signed ex-Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams. What's the real headline?
Another weapon for Aaron Rodgers to blame when things go wrong.
I just can imagine him not even saying anything, just looking at Mike Williams and pointing left, like, that way.
Yeah.
That way. You know, he's so demanding. But you know what? Quarterbacks like that get the most out of their athletes, or they just beat them to death to where there's no more confidence in them. I hope as he ages gracefully, Aaron Rodgers finds the balance. It's like me as a coach. When I got my first head coaching job at 28 years old, man, I was fiery. I'm hollering. I'm screaming. I'm going nuts. As I got a little bit older, you pick your time to be fiery and be yelling and going all crazy and stuff. I'm hoping that's it for Aaron Rodgers, man. There's not a lot of time left in his career. So I hope he makes the best of it. That roster is looking okay over there for the
Jets.
It
really is. And who knows if this is his final year. I'm going to guess that it is, just given his age and given that he has other aspirations in life. But I will say he is good enough to be as horrible or rude as he wants. And I don't know that he's horrible or rude. I've never met Aaron Rodgers. He comes off as a little pretentious, but a lot of people are. That's okay. I can be sometimes. I will say, though, like, it's one of those things where if you're great, you can kind of get away with it. You sometimes wish that the great ones were also really cool.
Yeah.
You know, like, Beyonce could be a huge jerk and I'd be like, well, man, she's Beyonce.
Here's the thing about Aaron Rodgers, though, is that every friend group has an Aaron Rodgers type of guy.
Yeah.
Like, I got a friend group. We were on a Zoom the other night, old men Zooming. That's what COVID did to us. We hop on a Zoom like once a month. And I got a friend who's just like Aaron Rodgers, and we love him to death. So, I mean, I get it. I understand him.
Someone said, Stacey, South Korea is a pretty big market. Yeah, but I mean, like, in Major League Baseball.
Yes.
LA being
Stacey, the game wasn't sold out. The game did not sell out.
I know it's South Korea, but I'm saying that, like, goodness gracious. And I know baseball's an international sport, clearly, but, like, I agree with Bump. I think it would have been fun to have that game in San Diego or LA.
What? Could you imagine?
I think it just would be fun.
It would, man.
Yeah.
It could have been broadcast at a more normal hour.
That too. Maybe it's still in South Korea, and I don't know how that time would have worked. But
yeah, we were doing the conversions back here. I think if you had started it at like noon Seoul time, you could have had it like 7 p.m.
Oh, that's completely acceptable, which is still 10 here. Still more acceptable than 3.
7 p.m. East Coast is 4.
Oh, just kidding. 4. Yeah. I did it backwards. I'm going to end
Stacey
this.
Hops on a plane that changes time zones.
I go literally into the future. You're listening to Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Marvin Harrison Jr. making headlines again. Find out whether or not people are just overreacting this time. That's next.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
Taking a look around the NFL, we're actually going to start in college. In fact, at Ohio State's Pro Day, when Marvin Harrison Jr. is not working out. Now, I know that some people had an issue with him not working out at the Combine, maybe not going to interviews at the Combine, doing the same with Ohio State's Pro Day. Here's the question, Bump. Does he even need to?
Do you think Tom Brady sent a reel of his work to the NFL so he can become a commentator?
No.
Do you think Tony Romo sent a reel of his work to become a commentator?
I don't.
Some people just got different rules. He's the best receiver in the game, him and Roma Dunze. I would argue, I'm just saying, is Roma's up there with him. But some guys just can move like that. There's only about one or two this year that can do that. If Caleb Williams didn't want to throw, he could do that. If Jane Daniels didn't want to throw, he could do that. If Troy Fautanu didn't want to do anything at the pro day, he could do that. Different rules for different folks. I ain't mad at him. He's going to be the first receiver taken.
I just really don't even think it's that big of an issue. Now, I understand trying when it's this big an investment. He's going to be taken in the top 5. And if you have this big of an investment in a player, you want to make sure that the character things are all there. So you're trying to weed through anything that could possibly in any way be a red flag. And I can understand that in an industry that values work ethic and toughness and grit, wondering if someone's sitting out a workout is some kind of character thing. I think it's injury prevention. And I think it's understanding, like, I don't have anything that I need to prove. I'm going to be here to support my teammates. I'm going to be here to maybe talk to a scout or something if they're here, but I don't need to prove anything. And I don't want to risk hurting myself. I mean, guys do get hurt at pro days and at the combine.
He could lose money.
Yeah.
If he runs a slow 40 and Rome's numbers are better than his, he could lose money. This is the most leverage he will have in the NFL unless he becomes the best receiver in the league and he's demanding $35 million a year. Go ahead and do what you do, Marvin Harrison
Jr. I also just don't know that I would necessarily, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. ends up being a huge locker room cancer, but I feel like we haven't heard a lot about that. We've only heard good things. This is something that, quite honestly, I think I might do this too. It's just, I don't know if it's a generational thing. I don't know what it is. It's like, I don't know, if I drew a perfect picture, your thing about like you can only lose money, like if I made something perfect, I don't want to touch it. I'm just going to sit and wait for everyone else to finish and be like, I'm done early.
I'm done.
I finished mine.
Who's his dad?
Exactly.
Now, his dad has some off-the-field stuff, okay?
Sure.
But as a football player on the field, no problems. He's in good hands.
You've talked about this a couple times. We're going to revisit it, though. Some potential rule changes in the NFL. From Jonathan Jones of CBS Sports, the NFL and the competition committee are submitting this language for the dangerous hip drop tackle. The penalty is 15 yards. Officials believe they can correctly call it. So, I'll tell you what the language is, and then I'll tell you what people are worried about. So the actual rule proposal is against a hip drop tackle. It is a foul if a player uses the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. A, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms and unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips or lower body, landing on and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. The penalty is a loss of 15 yards and an automatic first down. So, according to Jonathan Jones, some people, including the players' union, are worried that this is going to be a subjective call.
Nah, no. Easy to call. So easy to call. Ask any football player, any coach. It is easy to call that. I'm glad they're doing it. I had a hip drop tackle on me one time, and I swear to you, I felt my ACLs buckle a little bit.
I bet you did.
Yeah, it's scary. So, nah, the right decision, good to go.
I think that this rule is going to be approved, and it's going to pass. And if nothing else, they do like a one-year thing. Like, remember when they did like, pass interference is going to be reviewable, and then they were like, this is too complicated and took it away. Like, you can have a one-year rule that's just a rule for that year.
Yeah.
I think that they'll try this out because the league has always been focused on reducing injuries, and anything tied to that is going to get approved, which is why I think we might also see some changes to kickoff. This is the other rule the NFL's competition committee is looking at. Thank you. So I'm going to do the same thing. You already know what the rule is, but I'm going to read it for listeners. So it's the same thing the XFL used during its sole seasons 2020 and 2023. So it's something that owners are considering at the annual league meeting next week. This is what it is. The kicker continues to kick from the 35-yard line, but the other 10 players line up at the receiving team's 40-yard line. So them and the opposing team are like 5 yards apart or something like that. At least 9 members of the return team line up in a setup zone between the 35 and 30-yard line. Up to 2 returners can line up in a landing zone between the goal line and the 20-yard line, but no one other than the kicker and returner can move until the ball hits the ground. The idea is that you have more returns because you have less players to run through before you can break free into the open field.
You have more returns and you the impact isn't as violent as it used to be because you used to be able to get a full head of steam 10 yards, and then the front line of the returning team is taught to go back 10 to 15. Then they turn around and boom, collisions happens all day, and that's where we're seeing guys get hurt. I'm glad they're doing this because a kick return can change a game. We've seen guys get into the Hall of Fame just by being great kick returners. It's a great display of athletic ability and speed and vision. It's beautiful, so I'm glad they're giving it a chance.
Next story here in the timeline, the Saints added former 49er and former Washington Commanders player Chase Young to a 1-year, $13 million deal. And they did that with the knowledge that Young will need a procedure done on his neck that will keep him out through most of the offseason. I think I'd still take this risk if I'm the Saints and if I'm just kind of looking to, you know, get right as a program.
For sure. And Young has had a history of injuries, but when he is healthy, there's no denying he's one of the best in the game. So go ahead and give him a year, and they feel comfortable with it. They've had their doctors look at him and understand the procedure. They're not saying, we'll cross our fingers and hope this goes well. Obviously, it's a procedure that they feel like he can get back from Chase Young. I mean, he can help any team.
Let's see. Next story. The Giants had a couple quarterbacks in for official visits last week. Those quarterbacks, of course, projected top picks, J.J. McCarthy and Drake May. Now, we all assume Drake May is going to go to Washington. J.J. McCarthy up for grabs. No idea where he's going.
No, he's everywhere. But this is good. It's not good for Drew, but it's good for the Giants. Mm-hmm. If they do draft a quarterback, I still think that that young man would sit for a year. I think NFL teams now have the option to carry three quarterbacks without having that count towards their roster count. So in the perfect world for the Giants, you'd have Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, and then a rookie quarterback to kind of battle this thing out and see what happens. But you need some insurance with Daniel Jones. He's really only put together one stellar type of year. Then after that, he's falling off. Then last year, he got the ACL injury. Good for the Giants, man. Bring somebody in to compete. Actually, don't, because I want Drew to win that job.
Yeah, I do too. I'm going to go back to the Marvin Harrison story. Jen in Beaverton, regular listener, saying, oh, the thing is, one of you guys or you guys said Harrison would work out at his pro day when he didn't work out at the combine. I don't like it. Always compete. He'll be fine, but I don't like it. I understand why Jen thinks this way. And I do remember us just assuming he would. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not wrong. We both were like, well, he has the pro day still. He doesn't have to work out at the combine.
Yeah.
But I also, so I did assume he might. I also have no problem with him not doing it, though.
No, if, I'm trying to find a comparison. Like, if I were to be offered, if I knew I had multiple, I had 32 offers on the table for a job, and most of these teams or most of these companies didn't care if I sent in a reel or I came in and did, like, an audition with you or whatnot, I wouldn't do it. I'd be like, well, he's not making me do it. Why should I do it for you? And I'm the best at what I do. You think Stephen A is going to go on audition for somewhere? No, they're going to be like, we've seen enough. Go ahead, we'll pay you however much you want, and you sign this deal.
I completely, completely, completely understand wondering if not working out in a football profession is tied to work ethic. I think that's when scouts and coaches and GMs lean heavily into talking to people around the facility. Mm-hmm. And with Ohio State, they got those connections, man.
Yeah.
They are talking to parents of players. They are talking to players. They are talking to people, to assistant coaches, to grad assistants, to professors. They are talking to everyone to find out, like, does Marvin Harrison Jr. have a work ethic issue? Or is he just trying to keep himself from getting hurt? And was he a great leader in that locker room?
And it's anyone you draft is going to be a risk. Guys can fake the funk in front of the right people for as long as they want to.
And they've done it.
And then some guys change as soon as they get the dollars. Either way, this is going to be a risk. But you put on the film, he's the best in the country, him and Rome.
I mean, we talked with Nick Bumgardner, and we were like, who's going to transition most easily? And he was like, Marvin Harrison Jr. Mm-hmm. Like, expect Marvin Harrison Jr. to have that kind of Jamar Chase-esque transition where he's just a pro.
Yep.
You're watching an offensive rookie of the year peak candidate. I can promise you he's the odds-on favorite right now before he stepped foot on a professional football field. It's a fascinating conversation, one I'm sure we'll revisit as we inch closer to the draft and find out who might be taking him. We are going to get to the Seahawks. The entire final hour is going to be dedicated to that. Seattle Times' Bob Condotta joining us at 1 to kick everything off. Don't go anywhere.
Bumpin' Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Ross.
We're going all Seahawks in the 1 p.m. hour, so this is the last time we'll be talking about college sports. In this case, Washington. Obviously, Troy Dannon spent less than 6 months on the job as Washington's athletic director before taking the same job with Nebraska on a six-year deal. Now, he's a Midwesterner. I'm sure he watched, when he was younger, Nebraska in its heyday, becoming, as Curtis called, quite truly a football factory. And in Nebraska is a different program. It's a more storied program. I know that sometimes it hurts to hear that, but there is a different connection that some people, specifically people that are from the Midwest, might have to it.
I'm baffled.
What do you mean you're baffled?
I'm baffled at the fact that some UW people really think that UW and Nebraska are equivalent. No matter what has happened over the past 5-10 years, Nebraska has had like a 50-year head start. There are some programs, when you think of them, you just think of greatness, and they could be booty cheeks at the time. And you're still thinking, oh, that's a great program. Notre Dame ain't done nothing in so long.
Yeah.
But they're on TV every single day. Signed a deal with ABC. Obviously, there are different things going on. So I just, I appreciate like the loyalty that some of these fans have. But the way that people are texting us on this text line about us talking about UW not being on the level of Nebraska as far as prestige blows my mind.
The way that I feel about it as a UW alum is that it is not on the same level. There is a different history with other programs, but that I want it to be, that it can up itself.
It
and
can.
I'm stuck trying to figure out how it does that.
It
like,
can.
How do we do that?
That's the thing. It can. But you have to be in the moment and realize who you are in this moment. And in this moment, the University of Washington is, or the football team specifically, is a program that was one of the best in the country the last 2 years, but has also had so much change at the AD position, at the head coach, players leaving, guys transferring. This ain't the same. G. Sky came in here and said some real stuff on one of the breaks. I think you were down getting a snack. Mm-hmm. He goes, and please believe they're playing big boys this year. And let's see what that attendance looks like when you guys start the season 0-2 or 0-1 or 1-3 or whatever.
Fair.
Because it
Fair.
Ain't gonna, you're not going to start off the season 10-0. It's going to be a different year.
Well, and there is a rabid type of fan base with certain programs. And this is what's tough when it comes to UW, when it comes to the Pac-12 at large. The Pac-12 started eating itself, hurting itself. Larry Scott, a huge part of that. But there is also just a difference in culture when it comes to football in the Pacific Northwest, on the West Coast, yeah, compared to the South, and especially the Southeast. And the Midwest. Yeah. Like, that is part of it. Now, you can combat that. I mean, look at USC in its heydays under Pete Carroll. It's not like anyone was saying, like, you can only play football like this in the Southeast. No, USC was dominating. Mm-hmm. Everyone wanted to go to USC. Everyone was talking about USC. USC had the best players, including the best running back in the country, and still one of the best college football players I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So you can, and USC is a different program.
You haven't even on USC's level.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, what now? Like, how do you get to that next level? To me, there is a kind of fan buy-in that's required. And this isn't me saying fans are the reason for anything.
Nah.
This is me saying that UW is going to be in a very different place following a dissolved Pac-12 heading into the Big Ten. I agree with Christian Capel, who joined us earlier, that going to the Big Ten overall is better for Washington's brand. I'm glad that Washington is doing it, even though I feel gross about the way the Pac-12 ended and kind of angry about it. I also worry about what being in the Big Ten means for this program.
Yeah, it's being in the Big Ten, and if they go there and have success, that is a step in the right direction. Playing the Michigans, the Nebraskas, Ohio State, Penn State. You have to surround yourself with that type of prestige and have success, and you can do it. Here's the thing. A lot of people are going to hear my words and say, oh, Bump's just a hater. No, I'm not a hater. I'm just being real and saying you're just not there yet. Has UW taken steps in the right direction in the last few years? Say since 2016, for sure. Three appearances in the college football playoff, two appearances in the college football playoff, but being nationally ranked, steps in the right direction, but it takes time. And someone says, how, Bum, we don't have a time machine, you can't go back. Yeah, you can't go back. That's why you are who you are today, because 30 years ago, well, I guess 91, you can hang on to that if you want to, and people do, and you should, because that's part of your history. But look at the history of your program, and it just doesn't stack up to these guys. The last 5 years have been better than these guys. But when you think of Nebraska football, man, like, come on.
Yeah, you don't think of 2023 Nebraska football.
No, there's history matters when it comes to athletics, when it comes to sports, especially football in this country. There's a reason why we look at the Steelers the same way, whether they win 9 games or 13 or 14 games. Why? Because Tomlin's been there and that defense has been on points as we could remember. You can go back to the 70s and you remember the Steelers dominating with Terry Bradshaw and all that good stuff. History matters. So you UW fans out there, I think you have an opportunity for your program to take a step. It's going to be tough because you lost a lot of guys. But you can't ignore the way that people diagnose and dissect football programs. They don't just go off of the last 5 years.
They don't, but I also think that you can change a program and you can give a program. UW has a history though not quite in the same way as, and I'm talking top tier. I'm not talking like all of, UW is in a very good place overall.
Right.
I also think that, especially for recruits, you can turn that story around quickly if you get the right coach, if Jed Fish comes in and makes this program really competitive.
And here's how real I am. Wazoo has to be good for 100 years before we're mentioned with any of these teams. That's just being real. Wazoo, we're a program. We're going to get hot once every decade for about 2 years maybe. We'll get the right group of guys, and we'll be hot. The tradition just isn't there. And if I can say that about my own team, don't get all frustrated and mad at me when I'm keeping it real about your team. It's just, that's what it is. Wazoo will never be mentioned with Michigan and Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia. No, we don't have that history. We don't have that tradition. But what we will do is be good every 8 to 10 years for 2 or 3 seasons and maybe catch some hands here and there.
I'm so fascinated to see what Jed Fish is going to do, to see whether this new AD can come in and make the right hires, because the advantage that Washington has over those schools is the money, are the boosters, is the background. It's not the boosters or money or legacy or anything that a school like Bama has. Don't get me wrong. But I think UW is closer to becoming like those schools. Not like Bama, but like is closer to becoming a storied program.
If they
and
win
has
in
been.
This
I'm
league,
saying this as a UW alum before anyone yells at me, but I'm saying it as someone who wants my school to be the absolute best program, like wants to be a dominant program.
If they win in this league, they're on their way.
That's what I'm saying. For sure. Really excited about it, and it'll be a fascinating story to watch. We are switching course here, talking Seahawks with Seattle Times reporter Bob Condotta next. Don't go anywhere.